Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you may have read headlines splashed across newspapers and online in the past week saying Japan urges young people to drink more to boost the economy. It was reported that the Japanese government had launched a nationwide competition looking for ideas to encourage young people to drink more following a fall in alcohol tax revenue. So are Japanese young people falling out of love with booze, or is there more to the story than meets the eye? Well, I'm joined by Dr. Rebecca Chiyoko King-Orion, who's Associate Professor at the Department of Sociology at Maynooth University. Rebecca, it's good to see you again. Thank you for being here. The National Tax Agency in Japan, now they've seen a big fall in tax income from alcohol in 31 years.
Yeah.
And this competition is based around looking at young people for ideas on how to turn this around, which seems a little strange to us on this part.
Sake Viva. Sake Viva is the name of the campaign. Yeah, I mean, I guess the first thing to say is I think it's really interesting how sensational this has become in the Western media. Like all the major Western media outlets have run a story on it, and how quick people on social media are to say, oh, those crazy Japanese people, what are they doing encouraging young people to drink? But I think, you know, it's good to take a step back and look at, first of all, the tax or economic context in which this is happening, but also the kind of cultural differences and kind of drinking practices or drinking culture that can exist across the world.
So take us through that then when it comes to the drinking culture in Japan.
Yeah, I think the big thing to say is that, first of all, people drink a lot later in Japan. So the drinking age is 20, and there isn't a ton of underage drinking in Japan. I mean, of course, it does happen, but not a ton. But it's more common, I think, and more formalized, what we call kind of enkai, to go drinking with your colleagues after work or drinking with your workmates. And I think this has spawned that kind of stereotype of the drunken salaryman, you know, who's passed out on the subway in Shibuya, you know, after a night out.
And that happens. There is binge drinking.
Yeah, for sure. For sure it happens. Now, it doesn't happen quite as the, I mean, Ireland's number two in the world for binge drinking, so it's a little hard to come close to that. But in Japan, certainly drinking is a part of the work culture, and you are expected to go, and it does reproduce the hierarchy in the workplace. So older or kind of superiors would probably be paying for the drink, and younger people would be expected to pour the drink for their, you know,
say,
boss.
Interesting. Yeah, so yeah. That concept of each person buying a round.
Rounds are gone. Yeah, okay. Rounds are not a thing. And I think the other thing to say is probably that we eat when we drink in Japan. So, you know, we have, you know, what we call otsumame, which are like snacks, you know. So it could be just, you know, chicken kebabs or rice crackers or dried squid or whatever. But because we're eating and we're drinking over a long period of time, I think in some cases people don't get as drunk. But when people are drunk, it's seen as a way of bonding with your workmates, of being able to kind of maybe lower your guard a little bit and say what you actually think. Because, as you know, Japanese people are very polite, you know.
So tell me then, what is the logic behind the National Tax Agency competition? Yeah. What are they trying to do?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it does have the tinge of a slightly harebrained scheme. But I think if you step back and look at the financial situation, you could sort of see where it's coming from. You know, first of all, obviously they've lost a ton of money. So tax, you know, revenues from alcohol is only 1.7% in 2020 of the total budget. And taxes on goods and services in Japan are actually quite low, so they'd be about 20%. So I think they probably thought there's room for growth there in taxing goods and services. In contrast, in Ireland, we have, you know, 28% tax on goods and services, or 28% of the tax that comes from goods and services. So we're actually quite high. But you also have to remember two things. One is Japan is a nation hugely in debt. It's the most indebted nation of industrial nations. They run a deficit every year. And I think this is actually really about the shrinking population. So there are fewer people to pay tax. So tax, the revenue is becoming more and more important. And the shrinking population is quite stark in Japan and also in places like Korea.
So what has been the response then to something like this? I mean, is it being seen as a harebrained plan, or is it considered worthwhile?
Well, there certainly is backlash even within Japan. Particularly health experts are saying it's wrong to encourage young people to drink more. But I think the other thing that's really stark is after the pandemic, 29% of people in their 20s in Japan don't drink at all. And so that is quite different. And I think, you know, it's young people understanding the health impacts of long-term alcoholism, but also socially making a decision not to maybe participate in kind of group drinking, you know, whether that's, you know, watching the cherry blossoms and consuming beer, or going to the work kind of do and having to have.
So does that mean that they're not socializing as much, regardless of the alcohol being involved?
Well, they aren't, and I think this is actually really interesting, and it's not just unique to Japan, which is people have to work very young people have to work very long hours. They could never dream of owning a home. And their job security isn't the same. So it's not, it used to be, you know, you were employed at Toyota for life. That's gone, you know. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of young people don't have leisure time. And you can see this in the rates of marriage are declining. Fertility is definitely declining. Japanese women, you know, it's only 1.36, and Ireland is 1.8. So they're not replenishing their population. And many young women, in particular in Japan, say it just isn't worth it to get married and have children. It's just too expensive. I have to sacrifice my career. I'm working long hours, and I just don't have time to meet someone to do this.
It's interesting you outlining the problems that young people face, because I'm sure there are young people listening to this who will say, well, it's pretty much the same here for me when it comes to job security and being able to afford a home and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I think sadly that's one of the problems of kind of late capitalism, is that young people are really, really paying the price. And again, in Ireland, I mean, I was, you know, listening, you know, 20-year-olds buying a house, buying their first house at 20, you know, I don't know many 20-year-olds who can do that. And many people, particularly in Dublin or North Kildare, will never be able to dream of owning a home. And the competition for educational places in Japan, their equivalent of the Leaving Cert, very similar to Ireland as well. And the long working hours, I think, particularly when people went to working at home, a lot of people worked more hours working at home than they did when they were 9 to 5 in the office.
So, and the aging population you mentioned as well. I would have thought that that would result in a culture of fostering youth and helping youth.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I was in Japan. I was in Tokyo in March. And one of the things that's really stark when you're in even the suburbs of Tokyo is how few children there are. And I think people do value children, but just the incentives, even the Japanese government pays you when you have a child. But even with that, the incentives are just too difficult, particularly for women, because it means the cost of childcare means you have to come out of the workforce, very similar to Ireland. And then it's very difficult to get back in. And we can see this in female employment rates in Japan. It's about 75%, which looks good on paper, but when you scratch the surface of that, most of that is part-time work, where they've come out of the workforce and go back in. So it's very low paid.
So the response to all of this, one of the responses to all of this, is to run a competition looking for ideas to promote home drinking.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that's really interesting is obviously during the pandemic, many middle-aged people were drinking at home, but they might have one glass of beer or one glass of wine with their meal. They're not binge drinking. And it's very different drinking than the social drinking I described at the beginning with your work colleagues, you know.
Is there any problem with public drunkenness? You mentioned, you know, the characterization of somebody going home late from work. But is it a regular occurrence or not?
Well, I mean, during the pandemic, I mean, even when I was there in March in Japan, they had very strict rules. So restaurants that served alcohol had to close very early. Pubs were not open at all until just recently.
No karaoke bars?
No karaoke. And that's a really good point, which is in Japan, when you do your work drinking party, you often end up in karaoke. And one of the things that's really interesting about that is it's a like socially okay way to blow off steam. Right. So we can sing and scream as loud as we want. We can put on silly hats, play tambourines, jump around with our colleagues and kind of act silly. And then when you go to the office next morning, sort of everything's forgotten and forgiven, which maybe isn't necessarily always good. But I think it's interesting culturally.
And if you go to a karaoke bar, is it a given that you're drinking to excess?
Well, you're definitely drinking.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, karaoke, depends who you're with. Karaoke doesn't sound so great when you're with some people, you know, because they can't sing. But actually, I think, you know, again, it's about kind of bonding, you know, and the social aspect, I think, is incredibly important.
And what other efforts are they making then to raise tax revenue? Because, I mean, they can't be assured that this one's going to work.
Right? No. I think it's interesting because I think it's actually, in some senses, accomplished its goal, which was to get international attention on the drinks industry in Japan, right? And I think a lot of people have, you know, have been like, oh, you know, on Twitter saying, oh, I'll go to Japan on a drinking holiday. Can I get a drinking visa? You know, this kind of thing. So I think it has increased already globally awareness of the issue. But I think they seriously, they have to think about their tax base shrinking as young people can't pay those taxes, can't pay into those pension funds anymore. I mean, you know, what is it? It's 29% of the population in Japan is over 65. I mean, in Ireland, that's only 19%. Mm-hmm. So they have a serious demographic problem with their birth rate. And it seems like they're happier to just let the population shrink rather than doing things like opening the doors to immigration.
And that, but that may have to be,
it may be
an option coming down the tracks.
Yeah.
And just something you said there about focusing attention, international attention on the Japanese drinks industry.
Yeah.
Why was that necessary, or why was that seen to be something that they wanted to do?
Well, I think it's interesting because Japan's been very inward looking through the pandemic. They still have restrictions, you know, for entering the country. When I went in March, you basically, as a tourist, you couldn't go in still. That's been very inward looking. And I think they realize now that perhaps they need to look outwards more. And the Olympics was a good, kind of effort in that area.
Well, it's fascinating. It's fascinating not just to talk about this competition, which I still think is harebrained, but yeah, to get an insight into what's happening in Japan and where it's all coming from. Dr. Rebecca Chiyoko King-Oreen, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks,
and we hope to see you again.